He's popular in Russia, and he's 60% plus popular. Is that legitimacy? The opposition wants to argue that, and they've turned, actually, the protest from a demand for clean government, democracy, and an end to corruption to simply Putin must go. But would that be democratic if they force Putin out of office? But it is a new issue in Russian politics, the legitimacy of the government, and this idea that making the Russian government illegitimate somehow, either in the eyes of its own people or in the eyes of the West, would be a good thing. I think it would be a bad thing, because in effect it's saying, let us destabilize the Russian government. And nobody asked what that would mean for us or for Russia.
Explain, what's the difference between the prime minister and the president in Russia? What does this mean for him to return to the presidency after being prime minister?
Constitutionally, this is a president-heavy constitution. It was imposed on the country in 1993 by Yeltsin after he used tanks against the parliament. That was a lost opportunity, because in the whole of Russian history, Russia's had lots of autocratic leaders. It's never had an independent, sustained parliament. And obviously, if you want representative government, no matter what country you're in, you have to have a parliament, a Congress, a representative one. The constitution Yeltsin imposed on the country gave most of the power, vis-a-vis the parliament, to the president. Putin rigged it, or I wouldn't say he rigged it, but he found powers within the prime ministership so that when he couldn't succeed himself after two terms, and he went to the prime ministership for 4 years, he remained the supreme leader in the country. But the power is in the Kremlin, both symbolically, traditionally, and constitutionally.
Who are the protesters? Who's the opposition?
That's a crucial question. Now, what we got in the United States is a media narrative that says the opposition are the people in the streets. But the established opposition are the parties in parliament, the non-Kremlin parties. And of those parties, it's the Communist Party. You had me as a guest in December, after the parliamentary elections, when the communists doubled their vote from 10% of the parliamentary vote to 20. The Communist Party, whether we like it or not in this country, remains the only nationwide opposition party. It's the only one that we would recognize as a real electoral party. The other parties are fragmentary parties with support in Moscow or in a few cities, but they're not national opposition. So by conventional standards, the opposition is the Communist Party, the main opposition. But something new is happening in Russia, and I mean, think of it. I mean, last night I watched Russian television, 45 minutes, state television news, 9 o'clock news. Of the 45 minutes, 30 minutes were spent showing protests around Moscow. And all manner of protests, anti-Putin, pro-Putin, anti-pro-Putin, anti-anti-Putin, counter-pro. This is a good thing if it doesn't get out of control. This is a new kind of politics. So arguably, there's a moment here where the opposition could be non-parliamentary. But whether that's a good thing if you want democracy or not, I'm not sure, because democracy is usually something institutionalized.
And what side does the U.S. play in this? Does it have any role?
Well, now, you see, here's the problem. Most of your listeners and viewers, probably on a sentimental level, think that democracy promotion is a good thing, that we should promote democracy. In Russia, it's been only a bad thing. It began, of course, during the Cold War, but it became intrusive after the Soviet Union ended in the 1990s, when the Clinton administration literally sent legions of democracy promoters to Russia to teach them how to do democracy. And it's had only bad results. My only own view is that we should step aside, that the American ambassador should not be meeting with the leaders of the street protesters the day after he arrives.
Is that what he did?
He did. And Vice President Biden went to Russia last year and tried to persuade Putin not to return to the presidency. In a crude way, it's none of our business. But there's a more fundamental issue here. The United States, even the smartest of Americans who spend their time studying this, don't have the wisdom to intervene so deeply. There's nothing more complicated, delicate, fragile, and produced by history as democracy. It takes time. We don't know Russia well enough to intervene in that way, and we've done only harm, I think. And, of course, it feeds into Putin, who claims that these people in the streets are getting money from the United States.
How is Putin going to deal with the protests?
Well, here's where I think we're at the moment, and this is the issue that's not being focused on in the Western press. Russia has a long history of lost opportunities to move towards stable democracy, two or three in our own lifetime. This, I think, is a very unusual moment. There are a lot of pluses going on because the Kremlin's changed his mind about about political reform because the middle class has come into the political arena. There are possibilities for real democratic reform at the moment. There's two questions. Will the maximalist, I don't want to call them extremists, but the maximalist in the streets push for a confrontation with the government? And it suggests that some of them will, but what happened yesterday, as in any system, you got to get a permit to protest. And they say, okay, you can have this area, and you can stay 2 or 3 hours. Then it's not legal. They're testing this now. Last night, they were given a permit in the center of Moscow from 7 to 9 o'clock. They refused to leave at 9 o'clock. So the police came in and took them away. It's part of a game, and the Western media knew it was going to happen. Is that a good thing to do? That's the question.
We only have a minute to go, and I want to ask you about Russia's role in Syria and blocking at the United Nations.
Right. Well, you know, we say the Russians are abetting massacre in Syria. The Russians say that we betrayed them on the resolution on Libya, that they voted or they stood us. They didn't veto the no-fly zone over Libya because we promised we wouldn't use it for war, and we did. So they say never again, and that's where we're at now.
And will Putin continue that line?
They have assets in Syria. I think it's incumbent upon them, if they're not going to, the Russians, if they're not going to support a UN action, to use their good offices in Syria to do something positive. And they've got their diplomats there now, and we'll see.
Professor Cohen, I want to thank you for being with us. Professor Cohen is professor of Russian studies at New York University, author of numerous books. His latest book is called Soviet Fates and Lost Alternatives, From Stalinism to the New Cold War. It's just out in paperback. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is looking for a development director. You can go to our website for details, democracynow.org. And we've just redesigned our website. Click on feedback to let us know what you think. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Matthew, Yemi Sheik, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcoff, Honey Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Chantal Berman, Mansi Khan, Amy Littlefield, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessel Noor, Jessica Lee, Vesta Godars. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Jerry D, and this is the WUSB Concert Billboard for the first part of the week of March 5th. On Monday, March 5th, Jazz Jam with the Bobby Sexton Trio will be at the Tap Room in Patchogue. On Tuesday, the 6th, Fanfaria will be at Webster Hall in Manhattan at the Grand Ballroom at 7 p.m. On Wednesday the 7th, Swear and Shake with Andrea Ballinger will be at Deepwell's Mansion in St. James at 8 p.m. On March 8th, Such As Us will be at the Bar East Ale House at 7:30 in Manhattan. Mute Math with Cannon Blue will be at the Best Buy Theater also in Manhattan at 8 p.m. This has been your concert billboard for the first part of the week of March 5th through the 7th. The online version of Concert Billboard can be found at WUSB.fm. and has an upcoming schedule months ahead so you know what to look forward to. You could also find the WUSB Concert Billboard group on Facebook.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's Super Tuesday, time for Off the Wall. All right, do you ready to go on the radio now? Should we start talking?
Oh, we're going on the radio?
Yeah, we should.
Oh,
I told you about this before.
Yeah.
All right, hit the button over there, please.
Yeah.
All right. What do you mean you already hit the off? Hello, we're on off. This is Emmanuel here on Off the Wall on WUSB. Tuesday night. I'll introduce you. And Kyle is here as well. Say hello now.
Hello now.
Okay. And you're going to stand again.
What's the problem with standing?
No, it's just unusual that people stand.
It makes you nervous, huh?
Well, it makes me nervous because I can't see you standing behind
anybody me. Anybody chooses to stand, and it makes somebody nervous, and they got to comment about it.
Pretty much.
Look, just try not to bring it up on the show today.
It's just not a big deal. I think, you know, we're already on the air, as you can see.
Oh, we're on the air.
Signals going out there. Yeah. We don't have any listeners yet, though, fortunately. but we will. We usually do. At some point, somebody in authority usually tunes in and writes those letters that we wind up reading on Wednesday. You know, with our lawyer.
We get great letters,
we
though.
We do. they're good.
Yeah, so we're here. The show's getting underway, and I guess we have all kinds of things to talk about.
As usual, we do. And here's the thing. We were wrong. This does happen sometimes. We were wrong last week, thinking that this was going to be a fundraising show. It's not. We're not going to be asking you for any money.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, of course, you can always go to the website, if you're so inclined, wusb.fm, and pledge there. You can do that. You can do that all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And gosh, do we appreciate it here at WUSB Stony Brook.
Because it keeps us going, keeps the radio station on the air, keeps things from falling into disrepair too badly.
And it keeps the resource here, and keeps students engaged, you know, and other people that might not have access to the magic of radio.
Mm-hmm. So. I don't think students should be engaged, though, not this early.
No. Engage.
Live your life first, you know. Travel a little bit. Get to meet a lot of people. Then, you know,
sure.
Decide what you want to do.
Sure. Engaged in life, not like engaged. Like marriage.
Oh, like in a manual transmission, that kind of engaged.
Engage the clutch.
Well,
yeah.
Like when you call a number and you get the busy signal that you say the line is engaged.
Right. But to have activities like this, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of students here. When I come to Stony Brook, I see a lot of students. And, you know, there's all kinds of different things you can do and, you know, places you can go on campus. Mm-hmm. And, we'd like to think that college radio is one of them. And, you know, college radio is not the same without students participating.
I like to say that.
It's good that they listen, but they need to know that they can listen. They can come down here with their friends. They can get out there on the air. They can say things. They could have their own show if they wanted to. They could just learn about recording. And editing or something
if
they wanted.
That's what I did when I went to school here.
But that's what powers this. That's the human power behind WUSB. So I guess I'm gearing up.
Students should get involved. We got a call from a student a few weeks ago,
right.
Which was awesome. You know, people actually do listen on campus.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be so rare. It should be, they should be beating down the door outside.
Yeah, don't take this as a pitch. I am ready to do that. I mean, I'll definitely, be able to help if I'm around. But I really want to, pitch to students to listen to their own radio station because there's cool stuff on WUSB.
Yes.
And B, consider getting involved because, you know, there's a lot of student activities and there's a lot of boring ones, you know, and maybe they're not for you. Well, maybe radio's for you and you don't even know it.
You know, there's controversy. There's all kinds of controversy that happens everywhere. You could be in a factory, you could be at school, you could be at home, but there's always something controversial that you can either ignore or address. And at this place, we're encouraged to address controversy. We're encouraged to talk about things and get listener participation. It's,
right.
That's what it's all about. And that's you know, kind of shaped my life over the years.
Well, and we have speech in this country. And I think in college is when young people want to test that the most. And what better way to realize your ability to speak as an American and a free person than test it out on air and see what people think and maybe get challenged yourself. So
I hope we do that tonight because we're going to have a full hour. And excuse me, I'd like to take phone calls for most of that hour.
And it would be really cool if students called in too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think some of the things... Well, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we had sort of a rough day, so we didn't have time to prepare much. But I have some ideas. We have ideas.
Yeah, but I think some of the things that we were interested in speaking about were things that involved young people.
Yes.
And what... and how they deal with things, how they express themselves, and how society influences that, how the media influences that, and how your friends influence you to express yourself.
So. And how South Park influences you and other,
yeah,
forms
it does.
Of, other forms of media.
It does. And then, like, what kind of consumer of the media are you? I mean, again, radio, you could come here to the station and be a practitioner of media. You could make your own media.
Mm-hmm.
But being a wise consumer of it and being able to deconstruct media text, I know that's getting into some communication theory, but as a consumer of it, I think being able to deconstruct it and to perhaps theorize as to how attributes of the way, like, media is presented to you, how it might influence your decisions or how it might influence your peers' decisions. And I think we'll get into this in the context of expressing yourself, maybe expressing yourself when life isn't going so good, when you get a bad grade, when you realize you might not be able to graduate if you don't get your thesis in gear, or whatever it is. We all go through trouble,
mm-hmm,
in life. And so I think we're going to talk about expressing ourselves, and even younger than college, but definitely college age. I mean, that's a pivotal point for a lot of people.
We're always going through crises. We're always going through challenges in our lives, no matter how old we are. From being very young to being very old, there's always something that we can speak out about or act on or influence others, inspire others. That's the purpose of communication, and that's something that we can have here as kind of a sounding board at the radio station where, you know, we have public airwaves where people can communicate what is on their mind. And this station has been used for that so many times over the years. I'd hate to think that because everyone's walking around with iPods and, you know, phones with music coming out of them, that they're not listening to the radio anymore, participating in that community, because there is such power there. Anytime something happens, some kind of crisis happens, either overthrow of a government someplace or a tornado ripping through town, people tune to the radio and they communicate that way. I've heard it so many times where all of a sudden a station that just basically is useless most of the time plays music and doesn't have any personality. When something happens, everybody turns to it, calls in, shares information, and that's something that USB is pretty much all the time. So I want to see more of that, more back and forth and communication.
Yeah, it's something that maybe it's in the back of our minds, but it definitely is a constant, you know, even if it isn't a crisis. And I guess, you know, you can use that for even your own kind of dynamic in life, you know, whatever you might be meeting, you could express yourself and share and learn. But anyway, I don't know what kind of things started this? How did we get on this?
Well, let's see. There's always some kind of a crisis going on. Always some kind of news story where people look and say, how did we get here? How did this happen? What could we do differently? And this could never happen here, things like that. And I guess the most recent is the school shooting in Ohio, which I think was a week ago yesterday,
yes,
where this kid just out of nowhere pulled out a gun in a cafeteria and shot, I think, five kids, killing three of them. Awful story. But, you know, these days in this country, when something like this happens, often it's not even page one anymore. That's how often it happens. That's how immune we are.
Page one. I mean, does it even get in the paper these days?
It gets in the paper, but it's almost approaching the stage where it's not even news anymore, because
exactly,
this kind of thing happens so frequently.
Right.
And, you know, we've been talking about this off and on with various people, recollecting how things were when we were in public school or private school, just grade school in general. You know, lots of other kids. How did people deal with conflicts? How did people deal with being ostracized? This is something fairly new. I mean, it's been going on now for a number of years, but it seems to have almost become the norm. And I know back when I went to school, it would have been unheard of. And today, you have situations where people pretty much treat schools as armed camps of sorts. I was reading a comment about this, actually. I forget which one. One of the stories having to do with the Ohio shooting. People were talking about their own schools, and somebody was appalled that their school did not have an armed guard. They didn't have an armed guard on duty all the time. And, you know, not only did my school not have an armed guard, my school didn't have a guard. We didn't have people could walk in any time. The doors were open. In fact, I could go back and visit my high school after graduating. You know, and these days, if I did that, it would be in lockdown, not just for me personally, but for anybody who doesn't belong there, quote unquote, doesn't belong there, walking through the door, lockdown. And that's a word that, you know, it should only be used in prisons, but now it's used everywhere. People in high school know what lockdown means. So to them, it's the norm. Walking into the school, going through a metal detector, having an armed guard there, basically being scared if you see anybody that you don't recognize, and assuming that people are out to get you, and assuming that you've got to take all kinds of precautions and just basically live in an occupied sense.
Yeah. When I went to school, we didn't have any guards at all, especially like elementary school. There was no guard. There was no security to speak of at all up until about sixth grade. And then I switched to a private middle school, and there was no guards there at all.
Mm-hmm.
No, not at all. There's no security office or anything. And in high school, there was like a parking lot monitor, but I mean, he wasn't really a guard. That was also a private school, but I don't think it matters. I mean, it just wasn't a thing. I mean, I had friends in public school that they maybe had security, and maybe one friend would tell me about it anecdotally. But I don't know. Metal detectors cannot relate with that. Searching. I mean, maybe you'd have a rumor or something, and then, you know, you'd hear about one kid, you know, having to, you know, show the student administer of students, you know, go through their locker and show them what the, you know, that kind of thing. But there weren't random bag checks and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's insane. It's being treated like you're at an airport or something. Even airports weren't like that back then, but that's a whole other story. But we just assume that people are up to something all the time. Everyone has to be checked. Everyone has to stand in line and be treated like a criminal. And I think you wind up with more criminals, more people acting that way. When they don't see the security checkpoint, they say, opportunity, you know, I can do something. And I guess I have to do something because that opportunity has presented itself.
Okay. So, but here's the distinction, right? They have alleged reasons for this now. I mean, we can say, yeah, it wasn't like that back then. It wasn't mm-hmm. like this. It wasn't like the other thing. But so they're doing this now because it's a regular thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are actually things, events that happen, people that die
mm-hmm.
in elementary school or wherever.
Right.
So
you point to that.
So what we're looking at now is if you step back, like the macro view is that like we have a systemic problem. We have something that's sort of cyclical. I don't know. People are copying it. It's becoming a normal thing, which is perhaps scarier than the response.
It is. It really is. I want to go into this, but first I want to go into delay. That way we can take phone calls immediately at 631-632-9872. So what we're going to do is play this little identification notice and then come back even stronger, but 7 seconds later. Again, our phone number is 631-632-9872.
This is Lester from the band Vulture Whale. You're listening to Radio Free Long Island, WUSB 90.1.
And we're back in Delay Land. Once again, that phone number is 631-632-9872. We'd love to hear from our listeners. But to continue what we're talking about, Kyle, as far as just strange reactions to things and the norm being changed as we see society evolve and devolve, I don't know, it doesn't seem to be good. Every time we talk about this, it seems like we're going in the wrong direction. And, you know, I use that as sort of, not inspiration so much, but maybe just sort of a faint promise that, okay, if society can move in a particular direction one way, maybe it can move back. I'm not quite sure how. Looking at things like what have been coming out of governments and courthouses and things like that, I have to wonder how we're ever going to turn around. But this most recent thing in Colorado, I don't know if you saw this story, Students and employees may carry guns on University of Colorado campuses. That's according to a new ruling by the Colorado Supreme Court that overrides a 1994 university policy put in place by the Board of Regents. So basically they're saying now that if kids want to carry concealed handguns on campus, perfectly okay, no problem at all. You got that right. Go ahead. Go nuts. Have fun. You know, I just wonder, where are their heads? Why is this something that we are focusing so much time on? We actually think this is something that students should be involved in on a campus. Why can't a campus say, no, we don't want you bringing guns onto the campus, period? I have a lot of trouble just even having the argument in the first place.
So,
and I'm sick of people pointing to, oh, the Constitution says I can do this and that. You know, so, the Constitution was written over 200 years ago. Do you know we have the oldest Constitution on the planet that we still live by? Everybody else updates things. And yeah. I don't care whether you're pro or anti this issue. You don't know what was meant in 1700s. It's a different time period. We need to update things one way or another.
You know, I don't want to talk about guns. I don't think it's relevant. You know,
you don't think guns are relevant to school shootings.
This isn't a conversation about guns. Because we've had conversations about guns. You know where that's going to go. I mean, come on, really? Do we need to talk about guns?
So we're just going to not talk about it because people are so out of their minds wanting to be able to carry guns every place. We're just going to let them have that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's part of the problem. That's a constant. I think we can count on that. Mm-hmm. But my point, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't mean to belittle. I mean, you're talking about an instance where guns are involved. But I think as we started the hour, I mean, mm-hmm. it's about expression. I mean, anything's a weapon,
yeah, but
right? You know, a gun's a very nice, over-engineered way of delivering a weapon.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I think, again, it's how we deal with trouble. It's how we deal with being whatever it is. Maybe you call it bullying. How you deal with feeling bad and depression or feeling like you're being pushed to the fray or something like that.
Okay, but
my
point is that kids have always dealt with things with what's at hand. If kids are carrying big sticks, they're going to use big sticks to like express themselves. All right, no matter what it is that they have access to, and this goes back to however long kids have been around. That is what they're going to be using to express themselves. So if you give them all this access to armaments and things like that, they're going to use that.
Right.
That's the problem. We have way too easy access. It's encouraged. People are carrying guns onto campus.
Well,
and you know, it's the same old thing every time.
Okay.
It's not the law-abiding citizens that are the problem. It's the criminal element. But you know what? It's the law-abiding citizens that turn into the criminal element. This kid last week was a law-abiding citizen until he stopped being one.
All right.
And all the other instances we hear about, registered guns. Look, there's a story here in the New York Times about the origin of this gun that T.J. Lane had when he opened fire at Chardon High School. It was a .22 caliber Mark III target rimfire pistol, a semi-automatic handgun made by Ruger that retails for between $449 and $559. So he took the gun from his grandfather's barn. It was purchased legally in 2010 at an outdoor supply store called Gander Mountain in Mentor, Ohio. The gun has a capacity of 10 rounds. He fired 10 shots. The Mark III is an updated version of the original pistol introduced by Ruger in 1949. It is favored for target shooting, and people take them out to shoot squirrels or rabbits or other types of small game. Primarily, these are guns that folks shoot at paper targets, according to the Times. So basically, this is just one of many weapons that this guy had access to that are just lying around.
Sure.
And, you know, if you don't have the maturity to direct your emotions in a particular way, that's going to seem like inappropriate use.
Right. Well, I just, you know, okay, to illustrate my point, I agree with you. I think, you know, we could go on and on. We really should, you know, limit access. But to that end, I mean, we should do the same thing with the internet, because I'm pretty sure kids are killing each other with the internet, and I think they shouldn't have access.
How
it's everywhere.
How do kids kill themselves with the internet? How does that work?
Well, I mean, you get bullying, you get people, you know, saying things on the social media, and then the kid, you know, thinks their life's over, and they jump off a bridge. You know, webcams
and
social media.
And then leads to another action.
Right.
True, yes.
Right, so we should limit access to the internet, because I think kids have way too, it's just right there, all they gotta do is open whatever web browser they want, and they can launch an attack and someone dies as a result. And the problem is access. It's just lying around. We need to limit the amount of internet that young people have access to because they're clearly not responsible enough. They don't know how to use it. We can say, oh, you know, the kids, they can use the internet. They're in schools. It's fine, you know, and they need it. It's a tool. There's all these reasons to have it, but I think we should limit it because clearly people are dying as a result.
So many people try to paint that parallel between the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, saying, well, if you support free speech, you should support free guns. I think they're very, very different because people do not die from words. They die from what they might do with the words, you know, or the actions they take. But it's very, very different, a tool that is used to commit all kinds of acts of violence and somebody expressing ideas. Yeah, they might be hurtful ideas. They might cause people pain. But, you know, if you're able to communicate on your own and you're somewhat mature in your way of thinking, you'll deal with that.
Understood. Okay. I mean, I was being a bit facetious, and I just wanted to illustrate the fact that, like, what concerns me more is the fact that this is – young people are getting that drastic to deal with, you know, society. And I, you know, get really concerned about, you know, the kinds of media that, and then the isolation. You know, we're ever so connected but yet very, very isolated. And that's all I was illustrating. I mean, I completely agree. And well, I was just kidding about the
and
internet.
By the way, please,
is not killing people.
All right. Well,
you know, we shouldn't limit access.
You'll have to answer to the internet users who will be calling in, I hope.
I can't wait.
631-632-9872. The thing is, you know, we've always lived in a violent society. We've always had issues and bullying and conflicts and things like that. Kids have always felt like they have nowhere to turn. It's changed so much. There is so much more violence, so much more people just cracking and taking out a whole bunch of innocent lives as a result. And you know, I just think that the direct connection to that is the obsession that so many people have with weaponry. And I think that is a sickness, and it needs to be addressed. And it's got nothing to do with taking away your rights or anything like that. It's taking a look at yourself saying, why does this matter so much to me? You're not taking down the government. You're not getting rid of some oppressive regime, because we've tested that theory and nobody does anything. They just basically like to keep things and collect things and become experts. Fine, you know, admit that at least. Be honest with yourself. But there's a side effect, and too many people just become focused and fixated on that and little else. And then it becomes a way of resolving any kind of issue, any kind of conflict. And you will have issues and conflicts in your life no matter who you are. And you will be driven to extremes. You will be tested. Happens all the time. You know, by basically making this so easy, I think that leads to a lot more violence. I don't know how to get out of it, because right now we live in a society where people want to get guns to protect themselves against all the other people who get guns. Where does that end? You know, it's our own little individual arms race that we've got going.
It's the butter side up battle, right?
What's that?
It's a very famous Dr. Seuss book.
Oh.
Yeah, it's basically about nuclear arms races, but it's the same story.
Should we take this call? We have a call.
Yeah, take it.
All right. Hey, good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up, please.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I do agree that I don't think the gun issue is the whole matter. I think one thing a lot of people overlook after any type of school violence is whether the person committing the act of violence was on any type of medication or whatnot, you know, antidepressants, antipsychotics, whatnot. Yes, that's pretty much what I'd say.
Well, I mean, that's an issue as well. Sure, people are over-medicated or sometimes under-medicated, and all kinds of things can happen. But when you inject these lethal weapons into the mix and make it easy for almost anybody to get a hold of them, you know, as the lunatic who took out Gabriel Giffords in Arizona last year, this guy should have been medicated, should have been on something, was obviously showing all kinds of signs that all was not right with his head, yet he still had easy access to weapons, and people would defend that, saying there's no reason this guy should be kept from having access to this. You know, with that kind of mentality, it's no wonder that these things happen more and more often.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I'm not 100% against gun ownership or whatnot, but I think it's a powerful privilege, and it should be controlled as such.
Yeah, I think you've got that. I mean, there are people who would argue very vehemently that's not a privilege, it's a right. But, I mean, let's look at the world we live in now. We have hundreds of millions of people who live in this country, not the same thing as the 1700s when whatever was written was written. It's not something that is necessary to get by in life, at least not around here, not in Suffolk County, New York. So we need to look at this as a society, not take away people's rights, not force people to live in oppression, but ask what is better for the common good. And I just don't see how we can look at our society today and say, yeah, this is helping.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you.
Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm actually calling from Port Jeff.
Okay, and you're in your car, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, I'm in my car now, but I live in Port Jeff.
Okay, well, drive safely.
All right, thank you.
And thanks for your call. 631-632-9872. We're here on Long Island, but you can call from any place on the planet if you wish.
Yeah, streaming worldwide.
But, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, I think we get it. Growing up is hard. Being in school is hard. The worst years of my life, actually, took place in public school. No kidding. And I have to say, I got bullied quite a bit in school. I've talked about this on the radio, and I know other kids who got bullied even worse. I can tell you stories that would curdle your hair. It's horrible things that kids would do to other kids. And I got to say, you know, when you're in that kind of situation, you want to get out of that situation one way or another. And you'll pick whatever is easiest to do that. If I could press a button and blow up their house, I would have done it.
Well,
definitely.
And if you're the wimpy kid, if you're kind of, you know, into other things, you're not, you know, the football star, whatever. You know, all you need is this one tool, and all of a sudden, you're mm-hmm. the scariest guy in the room.
Yeah, and copycats, people who see the attention, sometimes just that kind of fame is enough. It seems like an achievement, seems like an accomplishment. You look at the mass media, how they treat it, how they focus and fixate on every detail of somebody's life. Sounds kind of cool, doesn't it? I mean, what else are you going to do with your life? You know, working some 9 to 5, you know, for 40, 50 years? Or you're going to get some fame and have People Magazine writing about you.
Yeah, and then spend the rest of your life in jail or worse.
Yeah, but, you know, we were sort of having some parallels between the kid who did the shooting, T.J. Lane, and Justin Bieber. You know, two kids, basically about the same age, both having all of mass media looking at them and talking about them nonstop.
Yeah.
Two different paths, but basically the same story of just mass consciousness and... not really dealing with what the problems are or how to make things better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Life's chaotic. It can take you in all kinds of directions. And, I mean, anybody, a young guy that's seeing that comes from a really kind of tough upbringing, mm-hmm. You know, single mom, that kind of thing, you know, but you know, he had the right things. He had ways of expressing himself.
You're talking about Justin Bieber
himself.
Now. Yes.
Yeah, I am, actually. Isn't that amazing? But that's so true. I mean, mm-hmm. He came from a really kind of rough, a small outlying town in Canada, and it was kind of a rough upbringing. You know, not the richest kid, probably not the most popular, and all of that. And that factors in a lot, you know, because you're wearing different clothes, this, that, and the other thing. I'm sure he can speak to it a bit more. And he had a way of expressing himself. Mm-hmm. And that just rocketed him into a completely different life. Now, I don't know how much we want to get into his current situation, but
yeah,
had he not had that and not been a musician, not been able to sing, to really express himself, what would have happened?
Yeah, he could have totally gone in a different direction. All kinds of events can transpire. Yeah. You never really know.
Yeah,
we do have another phone call. Let's take this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel. Bobson from Bulgaria.
It's Bobson from Bulgaria. How are you doing?
Hey, Bobson.
Hi, Kyle. I have a question for Kyle, actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it on topic, I hope?
Well, not with this show, but with previous ones. When you traveled from Seattle to New York by train with your bike in tow.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The
tall bike?
No, it was not the tall bike.
Okay, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, it was. Don't think it didn't cross my mind, Bobson, but I do have a tall bike. It's actually three bikes welded together.
I've seen pictures of it, yes.
Yeah, and it's about 53 inches. No. Well, several feet tall. And has an extended chain and a bunch of other things. But actually, Amtrak has exceptions in their bike policy for recumbents and other unusual bikes. And I was fairly confident that if I rolled up and asked them to package up my tall bike, they would have considered it an unusual bike and refused me. And I really didn't want to get refused at the train station and have to leave my tall bike at King Street there in Seattle. So that's a good question. I really did. I wanted to bring it. I thought, man, it would be fun to ride around Long Island or into the city in New York on the tall bike, because it's something different. Not a lot of people know about tall bikes, so I'm glad you asked, and I hope you're well out there in Bulgaria.
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Well, Bobson, let me ask you this: since we were talking about constitutions and things like that, when does the Constitution of Bulgaria date from? When do you guys last update that?
I think it's the early 90s, maybe late 80s.
1790s?
91, maybe.
1790s or 1890s?
1990.
So that's pretty new. That's pretty current, isn't it?
Well, I guess.
Bulgaria, that sounds like an old country. So, you know, I kind of figured they had a really old constitution. But
been around here for the past 1300 years and change in one form or another, or as part of an empire or not, what have you. But the last constitution has been, okay, maybe it's 1991, but I think it's 1990s.
Well, it's pretty damn recent. And, you know, here in this country, we are so afraid of changing things that are old. And I think we need to get over that and start modernizing and thinking about, okay, what do we do now, and stop living as if, we're still settling the Wild West. And, there's a lot of good that can be done. Sorry?
And that would be a nice thing to,
Right. Well, I think, the way to get there is to talk about it. And it just seems to me that a lot of my compatriots sort of avoid the issue because they don't want to start the argument. And I'm kind of sick of that, to be honest, because look where that's gotten us. We're just in a society where things keep getting worse and out of control. We have wars on drugs and wars on all kinds of nebulous concepts, and we're not actually making progress. Meanwhile, we see the rest of the world leapfrogging over us and doing really cool things, and I'd kind of like to be part of that.
Well, be part of it then.
I mean, as a nation, not just as me, but yeah. Okay, any other comments?
Oh, not much. I want to give a shout-out to the IRC channel.
Okay. The IRC channel called what, and where can people reach it?
Well, it's on the 2600.net IRC network, and the channel is called hash off the wall.
So # off the wall on irc.2600.net. How many people are in there right now?
Well, there's five presences, of which maybe two of us are awake or showing.
That's not very many. I thought you were going to say something like 50 or 60, but five?
Well,
we need more people than that. Maybe people just don't know about it.
Oh, well.
All right, if you're listening on a computer anywhere in the world right now, can you just storm into that channel right now, show Bobson that there's people out there awake, and start getting a discussion going about how insane I am for, like, wanting people to not stop shooting each other and things like that. IRC.2600.com.
Not insane enough, if that's what you call it. I mean, guns and all that stuff is kind of crazy over there from what I've seen over the past years.
Right. Did I give the wrong IRC network? What did I say, Kyle?
Yeah, it's irc.2600.net.
What did I say? I said .com?
You said .com.
Oh, my God. How could I do that? No, it's a totally different thing. Totally different.
Figure it out.
Different zone file. It goes to a totally different place.
No,
don't go there. Oh, my God. No, irc.2600.net, N-E-T. And the channel is #. Well, every channel has a #. They all begin with # off the wall. No hyphens, no dashes, no dots, nothing like that. Just off the wall. And probably a couple dozen people have joined since we started talking about this, right, Bobson? No?
Oh, I don't know if the delay is there yet, but no, not really. Sorry to say, but
was in NetSpot.
We're not kidding, folks. We really need to see people join that IRC channel, or we'll think nobody's out there. All right, Bobson, great hearing from you. Hopefully we'll see you at some point again. Are you coming to the Hope Conference this July?
Not as far as I know so far.
Okay. Well, we might be able to get, like, maybe a CIA plane that's dropping people off in Bulgaria to on the way back to bring some people over. We'll see.
I'm not going to enjoy that.
Well, it's not about enjoyment. It's just about transportation and what's economical and things like that. But we'll see you one way or another.
Well, yeah, somewhere around.
All right. Hey, great hearing from you, and say hi to everybody out there in Sofia, Bulgaria.
Okay.
Is that the Rendition Express?
Yeah, it is.
Have a good night.
Have a good night.
Good night.
And that's our friend in Bulgaria. We know you're out there, too, people who have not called us yet, 631-632-9872. It's always great to hear from them. But, yeah, you know, we're talking about people expressing themselves. And, you know, for young people, that's always a tricky thing. Like, how do you express yourself? You're talking about things that you're doing. You know, riding a tall bike, for instance, that's awesome. It's like it's like something that's unique, says who you are as an individual. And I think kids really have to be encouraged to be individual, even if it doesn't fit in, even if they seem to be a little bit strange. Maybe their hair is weird style. Maybe they dress in a strange way, or maybe they're not following the path that you as a parent want them to follow, as far as you know, how manly they are, what sports they're into, or if they're into sports at all, or what kind of music they appreciate. Or there are so many things, infinite. But the thing is, whoever these kids are, they're individuals, and that's what has to be encouraged more than anything. You're into this. You're into this kind of writing. You're into this kind of music. That's great. Tell me more about it. You know, let's have a dialogue. And I don't think there's enough of that. I don't think there's enough positive reinforcement. Instead, we want people to live up to our expectations.
To sit still.
Yeah, sit still and don't rock the boat. Be like everybody else. And I'll tell you, you know, if you know kids that aren't like that, that's something to be proud of, that they are existing as individuals. And I think if more people got that encouragement, they'd have a lot less frustration in their lives. They'd realize that they're not alone. Even if you're growing up somewhere in, like, you know, Iowa or Kentucky, I don't want to pick on states, but places where, you know, it's not like New York where you just have to, you know, walk a few feet and you meet someone stranger than you, where you feel like you're the outcast and nobody can understand you, no one has the same points of reference. You know, kids like that really deserve a lot of credit for existing in the first place. And it's important for them to know that they're not by themselves, they're not alone. I've met so many people through this show and through the other show who basically listen and share information and are enlightened and have prospered as a result of just communicating with like-minded people and differently-minded people as well, but just being part of the entire dialogue.
Mm. Yeah, so true. And yeah, I mean, I think it's tempting. I don't know. I have no idea what it's like to be a parent, but I mean, and there are awesome parents out there, but I can kind of empathize. And I think in a busy day or in a moment in the many years of rearing children, mm-hmm. You know, it's tough. It's a stretch to change your listening of them and hear what's really happening. But there's also some beauty in there. I'm sure parents have better anecdotes about it, but you know, you see beautiful sparks of possibility, and I mean, my folks were crazy. I mean, they signed us up for everything and just wanted to just stimulate us with all kinds of activities. I mean, I don't want to get into it. It's
I was going to ask you to list some of them, but
it might shed a little bit too much light on the kind of person or exactly who I was coming up, but I mean, I've done some really bizarre things. And you mentioned the tall bikes. I mean, mm-hmm. in that, you know, you pick up a skill, you learn how to weld, uh-huh. you know, and that's great. I mean, I took metal shop in high school too, but there's so much good, so much amazing things out there. It's just so sad that you know, some hot, you know, microblog or this, that, or the other thing is it for a child. And that's kind of short selling them in a lot of ways, because there's activities. It doesn't have to be organized activities. I wasn't really, like, for instance, I wasn't really great on, like, team sports, mm-hmm. like, you know, where you have to cross and, you know, kick the ball to this person or pass or something like that. You know, baseball, they always stuck me in outfield.
Me too. Me too.
It's just, I never felt like I was where the action was, and I never felt like I had good communication with other.
Once they changed sides and that no one told me and I was out there for both teams, no one said a thing. I was just standing out there like an idiot, and I forgot what team I was even on.
Yeah, nobody cared. You know, the coaches cared. Focused on his style.
Coach,
player,
what coach?
You know?
There were no coaches. We were just basically a bunch of kids in the field. And
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I'm thinking t-ball league and stuff. But
leagues. Well, I never was a part of a league. Sure. I did not fit in anywhere, and I still don't really. But you know, that's okay now. Now I feel like it's all right to stand out and be an outcast. But back when I was growing up, no, it wasn't all right. I wanted to conform. I wanted to be like everybody else. I wanted to have the nice lawn that didn't have dandelions all over. Of course, I had the one lawn on the block that had dandelions everywhere.
That's right. You told me stories about this.
Didn't have a nice blacktop driveway. No, mine for some reason was a much lighter color, and everybody made fun of it. Even my mailbox couldn't stand up. I came from a broken family before broken families became fashionable. You know, the thing is, back then, all I wanted to do was be like everybody else. And I realize now the best gift I could have ever gotten was not being like everyone else, because that allowed me to see things that others to this day have not seen, or just feel like this is what's important. This is what's not important. Being poor, yeah, being poor sucks, but it also opens up your eyes to so many things, and you value so much more. You don't take things for granted. Even when you become able to support yourself, you still don't take it for granted. You know that it can go away very quickly. You know that other people around the world are struggling just for the basic things, and you sort of get tied into that. You feel more connected. I pity people who have everything, because they really don't have everything and they don't know it.
Yeah, they're not. They don't have a structure for chance, mm-hmm. right? They don't have. They're not open to. They got a schedule or whatnot to keep, and appearances or everything, and that whole that whole barrel of worms or whatever. So, yeah, it's I don't know. There's a lot of cool things. I think communication too. Like as a community. You know, I don't have children. I said, I mean, I don't know exactly what it's like to be a parent, but I can empathize. And I think when I do get opportunities to see young people, I really want to listen. And I want to learn, and I think we should open communication. We should be available to like talk to people and
absolutely. But you know, we live in a society where you can't do that because all strangers are evil, and you got to run away from them screaming. Being a parent is very different. There's so many things we don't know not being parents, but there are also things that parents might forget about. Because they're around their kids all the time. So they might not see, yeah, you know what, this is something that isn't so bad. We don't have to freak out over it. It's a good mix. You know, it takes a community to bring up people. And we need to rely on that more. We need to have more community participation.
Yep.
Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. I'm sorry, Off the Wall. Wrong show.
We need to rely on that more. We need to have